Blog Talk Radio.
From the world we see to the unseen world we sometimes see that makes us stand in awe of God's universe, this is Betsy Belega welcoming you from Cape Washington in the south to Nunavut and the Northern Lights up in the Arctic Circle, from the White House gates to Lionsgate, to everybody listening around God's globe. Hi, Gigi. This is Tuning In with Betsy from marvelous Manhattan, terrific Toronto, and vivacious Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada. Today, my very special guest is Stephen Austin. Stephen is an international intuitive and healer, a clairvoyant medium, meditation instructor, lecturer, and author. And I meant to say a medical intuitive, so forgive me, Stephen. He has over 35 years experience in these fields. Stephen lives on Vancouver Island, British Columbia, in Canada. His website is www.stephen, and that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Austin, A-U-S-T-E-N.com. He's also written two books called Meditation for Everyday Living and Nature's Wisdom. So, Stephen, thank you so very much for taking time from your very busy schedule to join us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure. Now, what led you to become a medical intuitive?
Well, pretty long story. Thanks for telling people about the website because they can find out more on there. But I'll keep it brief.
Tell you something. I can, and I'm not a medical intuitive, and I could never, ever pretend to be, but I cannot tell you the number of females, especially, who come and ask me medical questions. And I specifically say, and I do believe this, no psychic or that should give, or medium, which I'm a medium too, but I don't want to give legal or medical advice. And I'll tell you, if anybody's listening out there, go to Stephen's website, stephenaustin.com, because Betsy doesn't give medical advice. And for everybody that gets, and women do get all worked up. If their mother had a genetically, through the family, whether it's heart disease, breast cancer, whatever it is, migraine headaches, they do come and ask me. And I always tell people, I'm not a doctor. But I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I just wanted to make that perfectly clear.
But it's actually good that you pointed that out, because it is interesting because, of course, with doing this work, there could be legal implications. The great Ed Casey was almost imprisoned many years ago in the 30s, 40s. When he was working, because he would go into trance and he would, you know, diagnose people. So there's always a little bit of a grey area, but there's no actual laws on it, provided you don't do anything really untoward. So but I'll stick to the question. So what led me to become a medical intuitive is a very long story, but basically I had the ability from very early age, so I grew up with knowing things, seeing things, thinking that everyone else was the same, realizing they weren't. And when I got to about the age of 16, I began meditating just spontaneously. And I was always interested in the idea of healing, helping people to restore their health. And basically, I joined the National Federation of Spiritual Healers in the UK when I was 19. And I did training with them. But they didn't specifically train us to be medical intuitives per se. And what happened was, as I was working as a healer, because that was my initial intention, was to just do healing on people, the clairvoyant side of my nature took over, and I found that I was sensing where the source of disease lay in the body, or whether it's even in the mind or the emotions. But very much for me, it became a physical reading, if you like, when I was doing the medical intuition, and I would just pick up on what organs were diseased, where the source of the illness lay. That wouldn't necessarily say what's the causative factor. That came later on as I started to develop more. But for me, I was getting the feedback from the people that I was working on with the healing that, yes, that's where I've got this pain, that's where I've got this problem coming from, and so on and so on. And I would keep focusing and keep focusing. It would unravel, and I'd get more and more information. So it naturally led me to actually develop medical intuition properly. Now, back then, when I was late teens, early 20s, I hadn't even heard of the term medical intuitive, and I'm not even sure if that term might have even been around at that time, possibly, but that came later. But to me, it was just a natural part of the healing and a clairvoyant ability. So what led me to it was really a deep desire to help people to recover and also take charge of their own health.
Well, how does medical intuition work?
So how it works, really, it does require having a certain amount of natural clairvoyant ability. Now, anyone listening that might be interested in the subject, because I have had some clients who have said to me, well, I'd also like to be a medical intuitive. When I do my talks, many people said to me, well, can we train to do this? And I've done short courses on it. And actually, what was really interesting was how many people were able to actually pick up on the symptoms of other people. Now, how it works really is, the way I can only describe it, it's basically using natural clairvoyance, which I think most people have in varying degrees. So some people might be extraordinarily psychic or clairvoyant and be able to really see and just sense. But really, it's just concentrating your mind on the subject before you. So whether I'm doing it on the phone, which one of the questions is going to ask about distance work in a moment, or whether I'm doing it in person, what I learned was just to focus on the subject before me, whether it's at a distance or in person, and then just keep focusing. Once I get a sense of where I want to work, and it might be more than one area, because many people have different symptoms, I'll just keep focusing gently. It's a gentle focus, which I learned through the art of meditation, by the way. And then I start to just go deeper and deeper. And with feedback from the individual, if I start sensing something, let's say, around the heart or the liver or the lungs or the eyes or anything like that, you know, they may or may not give me feedback immediately, depending on what's taking place. Sometimes 10 minutes later, they'll say, oh, yes, I do get headaches. And I've been picking up on it. So that can happen. And I just keep focusing, and we keep unraveling, and we keep looking deeper. For me, the way it works is that it's very physical. In other words, I actually see the organs in my mind. I see how they look. I might see an ulcerous condition or something of that nature. I might see some things that I don't understand what they are. That could possibly be in the range of cancer, for example. Now, that's always a big subject that I'm always a little careful of, because I never say to someone, oh, you've got cancer. But if I see something that I don't know what it is, I'm not sure quite yet what that means, I won't give that information straight away. But if I see that the organ is not working well, let's say we had a diseased liver, I would be working with the client to help the liver to restore itself. And we can use knowledge, information that I've got, nutritional information, etc., that we can give them to do some self-help work, because it's all self-help that they're going to be doing. Obviously, none of this is to say, you know, working outside of the medical profession. There's another question on that anyway, so that's the next one. So basically, for me, the way it works is that one of my clients actually said to me once, it's like having a safe X-ray. And I think that's a really great way of putting it, because for me, it is like that. I'm scanning the body and I'm receiving information. And I actually do a sketch of the individual too, whether they're in front of me or at a distance. And I sketch out what I'm seeing, how it's looking, and what the symptomatology is. So 9 times out of 10, really, I'm always led to the seat of the condition. So whether someone's getting some problem with their feet or the top of their head, it makes no difference. We'll find where the source is coming from.
And is it compatible with conventional medicine?
Absolutely, yeah. I never am against people seeing their doctor. I prefer it when their doctor's a little bit more open-minded. I get a lot of clients that say, well, they don't use doctors anymore, or their doctor doesn't listen to them, or something like that. But that's not always the case, by no means. There's a lot of very good open-minded doctors that are trying to be less drug-orientated and so on. I think, you know, the accident services do a fantastic job. So if someone said to me, I've broken my arm, I said, well, why aren't you going to A&E? Don't come to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So obviously you go to the place where they're going to fix you up. But I think it's very compatible with conventional medicine. And I'd actually like to see the day where reputable medical intuitives that have proven their work could be in a hospital type situation or a clinic where their services could be available as well. Because there are certain things that I've done with people with medical intuition where an x-ray has missed it and not seen what's taking place, where I have.
Well, I'll tell you something. I have a friend, and she broke her foot in half, her main bone, and her doctor didn't see it in the x-ray. Now, I'm no doctor, but I'm like, what do you mean he missed? The entire bone was broken in half.
Wow.
And she was walking around, and she said, oh, something's wrong. He caught the tinier bones, but I don't have as much faith in regular allopathic medicine as I used to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those people that I don't go see an MD. I do prefer alternative. But how do you help bring about healing with people?
Okay, well, I'll just answer that other question first about the doctor there, because in the doctor's defense, I will say that sometimes it's tricky with x-rays, because if the angle's taken maybe the wrong angle, you may miss something like that with an x-ray. And that's the thing, because if your friend went with a broken foot and they only took one or maybe two pictures and didn't move the foot or move around, it's possible that could be missed, and that's why that can happen. And what I do with medical intuition, I'm literally turning the organ or the joint around in my mind. So I can actually reverse the image and turn it and manipulate the image by turning it in my mind. Sounds bizarre, but I've been able to do that and be able to see things that they can't. So in other words, it's like I'm putting my mind inside their body, like a little camera, to have a look and see more.
So,
so the question was, sorry, I've got to go to the next
question. Oh, no. Yeah. I was going to say, no, I can understand, but it took a few other doctors to read this x-ray, and then some other doctors saw it. But anyway, enough of that.
That can happen.
We'll forgive him. But
yeah, I'll tell you something interesting, actually. This is where I wish that doctors were trained to use their own intuition, because we've all got intuition.
Oh, yes, we do.
A really good doctor is someone that knows how to look for signs and symptoms, the way the person carries themselves, maybe, even the way they walk. If you're walking on the beach and you see imprints in the sand, you can tell whether someone's distributing their weight unevenly on their feet, or whether they walk on the balls of their toes, or whether they push their weight into their heels, or if there's something wrong with their hip, for example, simply from how they walk, or if their feet are splayed out or turned in. And what happens with a lot of doctors, they aren't trained. The minute a client walks into their office, they're not trained to just sum the person up. And then if they were able to do that, they could then listen to their inner voice and say, what is this telling me about this person's condition? But unfortunately, what they're trained to do is to have a one-size-fits-all therapy. So therefore, they can miss the intuitive side. A good intuitive in the medical profession would probably not have missed that problem on the x-ray. They would have suspected, yes, it's broken, but I can't see it on the x-ray, so let's try again and have another look, or try a different way of testing it. But to answer your question, how do you help to bring about potential healing? That's a very big question. What we do there, my wife actually is a really good nutritionist, and she helps me a lot with information. I also have studied herbal medicine for 6 years in the UK, and between the two of us, we're always reading up on the latest information. And the way we bring about potential healing, one is that we give people the information they need to know, based primarily on the findings from the medical intuition, because many people, when they come to me, they've been to everybody and they still haven't got a diagnosis. They don't know what's going on. So what we do is I'll read them and then be able to say, this is the seat of the condition. Mm-hmm. This is the area of the body or the emotions we want you to work with. Often it's a several-way street. We've got the body with the emotions and the mind are all involved. Even the spirituality is involved. And with that, we really give them the power to take their health into their own hands by getting the products they need, maybe from health stores, etc., changing their lifestyle. One of the biggest ones we do is dietary changes. When people start eating the junk that's feeding the condition, they will recover naturally because the body wants to always return to homeostasis or balance. And once they do that, there's a healing taking place naturally. And also what we do is Carla and I both send distant healing, which works at vast distances for people all over the world. We do that regularly. There's a free service that we do for that, but we also do one where there's a paid service where clients will book healing with me, either in person or on the phone, and that's all on the website. But it works really quite remarkably, and we're often more surprised sometimes than other people of the results that we get when they email us and say that whatever condition has been clearing up, and they felt the healing even at a distance. So we use various different modes of helping that healing to bring about.
Now, I know you mentioned meditation. I spoke to a lady about 2 weeks ago, and I said to her she should start to meditate. I hear this over and over and over, and it is, can't empty my mind. My thoughts keep racing. So what advice would you give everybody, not one person, everybody, how important is meditation, and how can people dump all their thoughts into a mental wastebasket and just focus on, it's easy to say, nothingness, but mm-hmm. I'll let you talk now.
I love that expression, dump your thoughts into a mental wastebasket. Wouldn't that would be useful? If someone could invent that, an app for that, we'd all be, they'd be making a fortune, we'd all be free.
Yes, we would.
What I do, well, on my website, I do have actually three meditations people can access under my meditation recordings. I haven't had a chance to put more up there, but there's more demand, I will. But there's three up there that are very useful, and they've really covered just about everything anyway. There's one on there which is actually called the Sun Meditation, which people can use for self-healing. But also, for the emptying the mind, one of the best things, and it's one of the simplest methods in all meditation practice. Meditation, of course, is a very ancient practice. But I often think coming back to basics is the most important thing to do. With the busy mind that everyone suffers from, one of the best methods is learning to concentrate in a gentle way on one thing, just one point of focus. Too many people are juggling. They've got six balls in the air all at once, and they're dropping them all over the place, and their mind's too busy.
I'm not a big fan of multitasking, and doctors are finding out now our brains were not meant to multitask.
Exactly. And men particularly, we have a really hard time. My wife knows what I'm like. If she's trying to talk to me and I'm writing, because I write lots of books, it's just going in. I can hear her speaking, but I'm really not listening because it's going through one ear and out the other. I have to actually stop, look at her, and then listen, or I'm not going to take it in. But that's, I think it's important that we are able to tune other things out where necessary. And what I was going to suggest in meditation is candle gazing. It's a very simple procedure. Set a candle up before you and light it. And you just focus on that, and I've got a candle gazing meditation on my site if people are interested, which will save me explaining it too much. But the idea is to sit with a room fairly dark. Please don't knock your candle over and set your house on fire, or she'll all be blaming me. So have your tall candle set up on the table about 18 inches distant, and what you're going to be doing is focusing with a soft gaze upon the candle flame. Some soft music in the background is ideal, and you're just going to do that for about 5 minutes. And if you do that every day, with training, what can happen is all those busy thoughts gradually come down to one point. And even if you're thinking about what you're doing for supper later, or what comes in for next week, or what you're doing at work tomorrow, gradually you just bring your attention on your breathing, and you bring your interest and concentration back to the candle flame. So to the point where you and the candle flame become at one with each other. So you feel, if the candle flame is nice and still and there's no breeze blowing it, you start to feel at one with yourself and peaceful like the candle flame. Now, what's interesting, in Eastern mysticism, they say that what we gaze upon, what we focus on, we become. So when you sit and focus on an object that's peaceful and calm and bright and luminous like a candle flame, which is nice and still, you can't help but feel tranquil yourself. It's a natural thing. So when we use the eyes to do that, your body automatically feels more tranquil, and so does your mind. And then what you do after about 5 minutes, you close your eyes. And a great technique here is just to cup the hands over the eyes. I call this palming. It's actually a very good eye exercise too. And you then, if you were sufficiently close to the candle, if the room was sufficiently dark, you don't want it too dark, but just, you know, quite dim light, you should get an after image of the candle flame in the mind's eye. And whilst you're focusing with your eyes closed, you're going to look inwards at that flame, and it will change through a kaleidoscope of colours, blues, reds, greens, yellows. It's quite beautiful, until it disappears. And that's an internal form of concentration. Now, once you've done these two exercises, external gazing and then internal gazing, it's going to take up about 10 minutes. You'll find you hold that feeling of tranquility with you, you'll extend that into the day that's ahead of you without the busy mind. You're actually able to control that busy mind. And it actually becomes second nature in the end, where your mind just doesn't run off at tangents.
I like those. I like those practices. I'll try them myself. Can individuals heal themselves?
Yes, absolutely. And along the lines that we answered on the how do we bring about potential healing, basically, yes, we've got to take our health into our own hands. But also you can do it through visualization. So again, people could maybe look at my sun meditation if they want, which is very good. And they can train themselves to actually feel the energy coming in, to actually bring up their own faculties of internal healing. So you can actually heal yourself, not just with diet, of course, but that's massively important, and exercise and all the, you know, essential things like that. But you can actually heal yourself with your own internal energy too. We're living in a sea of energy around us constantly, so we can tap into a universal pool of healing energies which exist all around us.
How are our emotions involved with our health?
Well, that's really interesting, because that's really the emotional and the mental state is something that everyone needs to take charge of. Hence, you know, the meditation that you said you keep getting for people. So vital, because if your mind and your emotions are all over the place, your body will follow. As an example, if you ever notice, if you're driving your car and you're looking, let's say, to the right, and you're looking at some scene to the right, there's a very real risk that the car will start to veer to the right. Or if you're looking to the left, the car will veer to the left. Your body and your movements will go where you look. Analogy-wise, where you put your mind, your emotions, is where your body will go. Isn't that interesting? So in other words, if you're driving your car and you're looking or concentrating on something else, car will veer to where your eyes are looking, because your body automatically does that. It wants to follow the line of sight of the eyes. So that's why it's important that people don't drive along looking at people beside them talking.
Oh, no phones.
Yeah.
And the texting, it may be the last thing you do in your life.
Exactly.
I'm not a big fan of that, and people in Toronto still do it.
Talking about picking up groceries and you get killed for it is ridiculous.
Well, so, I think something like 46 people died in Canada, I think it was 46 last year, unfortunately. But can you also help animals to heal?
Yes, animals are really good with receiving healing. They're very receptive to it. If anyone out there is doing Reiki healing or spiritual healing, whatever name they give their healing, it doesn't really matter about the name. But if they're doing hands-on healing or distant work with an animal, often what will happen, let's say with a dog or a cat, they lap it up and they let you know when they've had enough. They tend to get up and then they'll walk off when they're finished. But they just absorb it really well. Akaro and I in England used to do healing on horses, and we had one big black horse that we used to treat. And this horse, the owner said she wasn't the friendliest sometimes. She could be a bit snappy. But this horse, when it was having healing from us, used to be falling asleep on her feet.
Wow.
Gradually leaning into us.
Wow, I believe you.
And it used to love the healing, and it really did recover nicely too. And so animals are really good for healing, because they have no judgment about it. It's the same with homeopathic remedies that have been proven that when they're given to animals, the animals recover from things like foot and mouth and so on. So there's no sense of a placebo effect with them, which there can be with people. Mind you, I'm not going to knock placebo, because what works, works. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, if someone takes a sugar pill and they're told it's going to heal them, if that heals them, that's showing that the mind and the emotions are...
Oh, the mind is very powerful.
Absolutely. But with animals, of course, that concept is different for them, but they'll just accept it and receive it, and they do often recover very well.
Now, I know you've had clients all around the world, And yeah. I know you're on Vancouver Island. Do you ever come out the Toronto way down the east?
No, I don't. It would have to really be a proper big venue or something like me for to justify it, to be honest with you. But what I do is, because of the distance work, working on the phone or with Skype or with FaceTime, if people have got a Mac like we have, that works really well. But you know what? Just the plain old telephone is no problem, because I don't have to see the person at all. And actually, what's interesting, when I've done my distance work, and we've got clients all over the world. We've got them from Australia to Canada to America to little islands you've never heard of and all sorts of odd places. So really, it's because we live in a sea of energies. If anyone's interested about quantum physics and wants to look at TV shows or read books on that subject, that's kind of proving more and more what Eastern mysticism has said for many, many thousands of years, that we're all connected and it makes no difference. Time and distance really are irrelevant. They're actually physical barriers which actually, in one sense, are an illusion. So when I'm doing distant work with people, I sometimes get clients that want me to work with somebody that's connected to them, maybe a child or an animal, and that person may not even be living in the same house as them. They might be in another country, perhaps, and we've been able to work that way and still retrieve information for that person's health and well-being and help them indirectly through somebody else. So it really makes no difference whatsoever. So me having to travel somewhere is really irrelevant. I don't have to. I can. We're all multidimensional. We can be anywhere. As long as the mind can conceive it, we can travel via the mind.
Oh, yes. Yes, my teacher in Philadelphia taught us astral travel. And I thought, what? And
yeah.
And then I saw a Discovery or History Channel special about a woman from England who was captured by the Nazis, and she was tortured. But as they tortured her, she sat in a chair, and she was looking out a window at a tree. So she projected her mind out to the tree and thought of her two little girls back in London. Now, she actually survived that, and she was a British spy, but anyway, she lived. It was fascinating,
yeah.
And I'm going, wow. And that's how, I wouldn't torture anybody, but they didn't have control or power over her. It really was. Her mind was more powerful than their physical torture, what
yeah.
they thought.
We have to remember that you know, your mind, anyone's mind, anyone listening, your mind as well, Betsy, mine, anyone, your mind is extremely potent. It's that part of you that is part of the Godhead, that has always been part of that oversoul, whatever name we give it, God or Great Spirit, it doesn't really matter. That is the part that is always going to exist forever, no matter what happens to the physical body. And it's extremely powerful, but we haven't been educated from childhood to use it. I think we should be. I think children...
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, we should be taught about law of attraction, what your mind can do, et cetera, et cetera, and learning how important that is instead of, you know, things that we're never going to use. But I think that's going to come one day. But that's the important part of, you know, the healing process, is that when you recognize that what you think about, what you focus on day by day is what your body is going to listen to. It's like the car analogy again. If your thoughts and your emotions are centered on a certain area, your bodily cells will physically respond to that, and they will start to either improve and get healthy, and you'll grow and develop new cells, or they'll get diseased. And literally, we're attracting atoms into our body all the time. When you breathe, when you eat food, they're all composed of atomic structure. So those atoms go into the makeup of your physical form. So we're drawing that into us all the time, also with thought and with emotion. So what we think about, what we focus on all day long, is extremely important to recognize that if we keep as positive, as optimistic as we can, and focus on something that we really love and enjoy doing, we've got a good chance of having very good health. And I think that's why someone like Churchill, who was a smoker, a cigar smoker and a heavy drinker, and he had quite a paunch on him, lived to be, 91, 92?
Yeah.
Because it was the attitude. You know, George Burns was another one, a big cigar smoker and lived to be, what, 100 or something?
Yes,
I think
he made it to 100.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason they did was, yes, they were polluting their body with doing the wrong physical stuff, and I'm not advocating people should, but because of their strong mental, emotional stability, although Churchill used to get depression, but Churchill used to heal that by painting. And he said when he did his painting, the black dog, as he called it, would go away. So in other words, if anyone suffers from any condition, find something that you love doing. Like Churchill would get his paintbrushes out and his canvases, and then he'd feel better. So you have to find something positive that you just enjoy, as well as obviously healthy diet and so on. But if you do the right mental and emotional things, sometimes some of your bad habits can be offset.
Well, Stephen, I enjoyed our talk. I can't believe our half hour is gone already. Like Einstein said, there's no such thing as time and space, but Blog Talk Radio does have time and space, and they gave me half an hour. But I'd love to have you on any time that you like. Come back and do a repeat performance.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Anytime, just let me know, and I'll do it again. And I hope this has helped anyone listening.
And again, Stephen's website is www.stephenaustin, and that's Stephen, StephenAustin.com. You can find out all about his healing modalities, his meditation, and his books at his website. So for everyone listening to Tuning In with Betsy, I want to say thank you to everyone. God bless you all. And don't forget to talk to your angels. They're waiting to hear from you.
Thank you, Betsy.